When I was a young third grader in religious education at St. Paul's Catholic Church in Hazleton, where we'd meet down in the church basement, our teacher during that year had us write a little paragraph on someone we thought was a living saint. And so a number of my classmates, they wrote about their dad, their grandma. I considered that, no. Instead, I wrote about Mother Teresa, who was still alive at the time, and she was known all over the world and nearly universally loved throughout the whole world as well. And know Mother Teresa, who when she was in her mid-30s, as a religious sister, she had, everyone, this profound experience of God on a train, in which she heard very clearly the Lord speaking to her, calling her to something very different from where she was at that time. And so she spoke about it as this calling within the calling. And based on this immense consolation and this thirst, she described it as Jesus' own thirst in her soul for the poorest of the poor. She began her own religious order, the Missionaries of Charity, serving the absolute poorest of the poor in the streets of Calcutta, India. And I'm sure my little third grade brain, you know, knew of her life and thought of all the people in the world right now who are alive. She must be the one who feels the closest to God right now. Right? Of all the people that I know, who would really just feel so close to God and just be experiencing his love so much? It must be her. And I thought of her. She came right to mind as I was praying through this first reading in which the prophet Jeremiah says the words, "You duped me, O Lord, and I let myself be duped." We'll come back to Mother Teresa in just a moment. But the prophet Jeremiah, he speaks to the Lord about being duped by him. His words are blunt and they are honest and they're filled with pain. Because Jeremiah was very young and he was called by God in a very clear way, in which it was no mistake, it was God calling him to this very specific thing, to go and to be a prophet to his people, to be his prophet. Jeremiah obeys and he is faithful. And where does that leave him? He is at this point here where he has been rejected, he is scorned, he is laughed at, and he is filled with immense suffering. Like that, right there. Tears, crying. But here's the thing though, Jeremiah, he had been called by God, and what it seemed like to him, and this is what he's expressing, God had called him and then pulled out the rug from him. He had called him by all this great consolation which the Lord was speaking to him, and the Lord was filling him with his strength. Don't let people tell you you're too young. You are not too young because I have called you and I will strengthen you, for I am the Lord your God. And so the Lord had called him, and then all of a sudden, as he's doing what the Lord asked him to do, all of a sudden, where is God? He's no longer experiencing him. He's in this place of near desolation. It seems like the rug had been pulled out from under him. And he says, "Lord, you have duped me. You drew me to this place, and now, where are you?" But the one thing he still has within him is the fire in his heart, in which he continues on in that faithfulness. Each of us, we desire to experience God. You want to experience him. When you go to prayer, you don't just want to go to prayer and experience quiet, silence, dryness. Nobody is going like hoping for that. You go, you come to Mass, and you want to experience God. And for many of us, the thing that brought us to God was that desire itself? Maybe in a place of just darkness, in a place where there was just a complete lack of peace and restlessness. And what God does is he gives us an experience of his peace, of his joy. These gifts of God, they're like breadcrumbs that he lays down. These gifts of God that are meant to draw us to him. And so we have this desire to experience God, or we have experienced him. And it led us to a point in our life where we know it was God who called me here. It's God who gave me this vocation. It's he who drew me. But it can feel then like he pulled the rug out from under us. God, everything was great. There was tons of consolation. I wanted to go to prayer because you were there. And now it's just dryness. It's darkness. Where are you? You duped me. You led me here. I don't see you anywhere. Last Sunday, Simon Peter, he confessed to Jesus in response to his question, "Who do you say I am?" He says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God, the one for whom his soul had been thirsting, the fulfillment of all his longing." And then immediately after that, after Jesus declares, "You are Simon, but you shall now be known as Petrus, as rock, and upon you I shall build my church," immediately after that we hear today that Jesus speaks about what it means to be the Christ, that he must go, he must be rejected, he must be despised, he must be crucified before he is raised. And Simon Peter wants to hear none of that, because he wants what Jesus had been talking about again and again in those parables about the kingdom of heaven, the kingdom of God. It is like this, it is like that. Not the cross. And so Jesus, who had just given him the name Peter, the rock, upon which he will build his church, he tells him, "Peter, get behind me, Satan. For you are a stumbling block to me. I have made you the rock, and you must be the foundation, and not the stumbling block that keeps me from my whole purpose, which is salvation. Because Christ without the cross cannot save us." Just as being a Christian without the cross, which none of us ask for, none of us desire, but it is there in every single life. And you can either suffer with Jesus or you can suffer without him. It is that choice. But when we suffer with him, it becomes the cross in which it teaches us how to love, and it transforms us into his love. Because why must the path be the cross? Why? It's not because God delights in suffering. He's not sadistic. It's the suffering, our suffering, that he enters into. But the cross, everyone, is necessary because in this fallen world, the only love that is salvific is the love that is God. God is a very specific love. He is a love which is complete gift, complete sacrifice. And that is the cross in its fullness. And it is only that love and being united to it that can change us, that can save us, that can transform us. But it does that by being united to him in that. And the cross, it is both of these things at once, and they do not contradict. The cross is a place of incredible darkness and desolation. My God, why have you forsaken me? It is a place of darkness and desolation, but it is all the more a place of love. It is the place where the love that is God is completely and fully revealed, and we're invited to it. But it is there revealed for all to see. It is a place of love. It is a place of sacrificial love. And we're united to that, everyone, by, as St. Paul says, making of our lives a living sacrifice. Right? And this is all those things, great and small. It's remaining faithful in our vocation. Even when the enthusiasm, even when the feelings disappear, the excitement of it, remaining faithful in that. That is the living sacrifice. Forgiving, even when the wounds still remain. There's a living sacrifice in the midst of that. It's entrusting ourselves to God again and again faithfully in prayer, coming to Him even when we don't feel His presence in any way at all. That is making of ourselves this living sacrifice. It's why Jesus says, whoever wishes to come after me, which everyone, that's where He invites Peter to be. Get behind me so you can come after me. Whoever wishes to come after me must deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. He never asks us to carry our crosses alone. It is always with him. It is always with him. And the cross is never merely suffering. It is suffering that is now a place of love, a place of union, of communion with Jesus. It is the path of love. Returning now to Mother Teresa. You remember when she began her ministry, for the first 2 full years, she described it as just a torrential downpour of God's love. When she would go to prayer, she would enter in, and it was just clear that Jesus was right there with her, that He was guiding her. How do I do this, Lord? He was directing her. It was just consolation after consolation after consolation. It was revealed 10 years after her death, when her letters were published, that lasted for 2 years, from 1946 to 1948. The next 49 years, half a century, was almost entirely spiritual darkness. It was complete dryness in her prayer and also in her ministry. But everyone, this was something she, and she wrote to her spiritual director, came to recognize as she was faithful in this, that place of darkness and dryness that she just wanted to get rid of. Jesus, I want to just experience you again. That was the cross and the poverty of the cross, which so many people live in day after day, and it is the greatest poverty people have. It's not hunger. It's not the conditions in which we live, which can be awful. It is not experiencing God. And that is what He was drawing her into. That He had not abandoned her. And she wrote to her spiritual director, she said, I have come to a place finally, where what I want is just Him and not His gifts. That it's not His gifts, which are good, that I'm looking for, I'm longing for, His consolations, His joy, His peace. But instead, all I want is Him. And if where He is upon the cross, and that is where He has called me, that is what I want. I want Him, not His gifts. And she recognized that her heart was being purified in this, and she had said, even if she could, she would have never wished away the darkness if that is what God desired for her. Because it was through the cross and that darkness that she came to truly know him and be united to him. Now I know. You're like, but Father, that's a pretty extreme example. You're talking about someone who, not just, okay, we all experience little stretches and moments of dryness or darkness, of wondering where God is at, but half a century of the dark night of the soul, that's a little extreme. Yeah, God does not usually call someone to that great of a cross. But everyone, and if there's one thing, if you've zoned out by now, if you just come back for a moment, the cross is in all sorts of forms, everyone. There's a crucially important question, and it is this. It's Jesus who asks us, will you love me, not just in the light, but will you love me in the darkness? Will you love me not just when you can feel me, not just when you can experience me, not just when you're filled with consolation in your life and things seem to be going good, but will you love me no matter what? Will you love me for who I am? Christ, the Son of the living God. People, everyone, we can spend our whole lives looking to find the gifts of God. And most people do. They're looking for the gifts. They want a real peace. They want to have a lasting joy in their life. But where is the only place that those can be found? It's in him. What is real peace, true joy? It is him. It's not some gift separate from him. It is him. But it comes through him. Through desiring above everything else, him. Do I want the gifts that belong to Jesus? Or do I want him above everything else? It's easy to love him in the light, but will we love him in the darkness as well? Mother Teresa, for half a century, except with a small respite in there of a couple weeks, she did not feel him. But through his grace, she was becoming very, very deeply united to him in the cross. Jesus, though, does not end with the cross in this gospel or in anything. He ends with the resurrection. And Mother Teresa said, never let anything fill you with such sorrow that you forget the joy of the risen Christ, of the promise that, yes, Jesus, who you are searching to find, especially in the darkness, that he is the cross, he is the path toward the goal that we are longing for. And he is also the goal itself. He is heaven. The Lord has not duped us, everyone. He's not duped us. But he is purifying our hearts. This he does. And the reason he purifies our hearts is because he wants them to be able to receive more of who he is and to be able to receive his love truly. To be able to know him more deeply, both as the path toward the goal and the goal itself. Whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. To lose our life in him. And where will we find it? Again, in him. Whoever loses his life for my sake will find it.